Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
So there we were, Phil, in Cardiff. And we were about to enter the Millennium Stadium for the match.
Just having a beer in Cardiff Arms Park.
The old Arms Park, the Cardiff Blues Arms Park, that is.
It's pretty cool, isn't it?
Next door.
Yeah. Did you go for a drink in the little...
The upstairs non-members bar, yeah.
And then downstairs is like a little car park thing. And there used to be a band, didn't it?
Yeah, they did that. And after the game, everyone was singing along to Feeder, Stereophonics, Manic Street Preachers tunes, that kind of thing.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So there we were before the game. We wanted to catch a bit of the LV Cup semi-final, Northampton against Saracens. And we were up, we're having a little drink. We both had a Guinness, sipping away when... What would you describe happened? I suppose using the Jeremy Clarkson language of this week, there was a fracas broke out.
There was all of a sudden...
A fight?
Well, all of a sudden there was a very loud bang, a load of smashed glasses about 5 yards away from us, and two bodies on the floor.
Now, I saw what happened, and what happened was about a 23-stone, 6-foot-6 gentleman... just decided to stand up from his chair and push the guy who was sat on the chair next to him, pushed him so hard that he flew back about 5 metres on his chair and landed on his back. But as Phil said, there was another person on their back.
Yes, because as he was pushed back, he put his arms out to brace himself, arms out about shoulder height.
Oh no!
And elbowed the 40-odd-year-old woman who was sat next to him in the head. And she was unconscious for a good 5 minutes.
Brilliant.
Alongside.
And were any either of them on South Wales supplements?
But they were everyone involved was like mid-40s.
Steaming drunk.
This is, yeah, 2 p.m. Everyone was hammered.
Absolutely steaming.
Some interesting haircuts and tattoo choices.
Very
among the group.
Wow, it's dark down there, isn't it? It's dark.
Like, it's like being in the Wild West.
It was. It really was. I wanted to sort of laugh or say something or point or go and help, but I thought I'm not getting involved at all because I would be in the firing line. You can imagine.
Yeah, good decision not to get involved.
Oh, dearie me. But it was an experience, and quite apart from the rugby, there is plenty to talk about, but mostly the rugby. And that's why we should put our hands in and pod on three. 1, 2, 3, pod! Firstly, I just want to say thank you very much to Canterbury for their wonderful support of the Egg Chasers Rugby podcast. They've sorted out a brilliant prize for our fantasy league, and we're going into the final week, so we'll let you know where things stand with that as well. £250 of Canterbury stash up for grabs, and we were Canterbury's guests at the Millennium Stadium on Saturday. The fun began before the game, as you've already heard. It was, I tell you what, you know what, JB, you always say, isn't it incredible how Wales managed to perform so well at rugby with a population of 3 million versus England's 55 or 60 million or whatever?
It's not just 3 million, though, is it? It's not just it's a small population.
What, a couple of Kiwis and South Africans as well? No, is that what you mean?
What I mean is, for the longest time, it's not just been 3 million. You're half that, because obviously half of us live up in the north, so they weren't allowed to pick players from there, full stop. And then you half it again, because half are women. And then you look at the actual percentage of people that can play rugby. So you're looking at about 20% of the male population of South Wales of 760,000.
This is a point you've made lots and lots of times. My point was, when we visited Cardiff for an international match, you realise... just by the people that go there. And I talked when I went to Twickenham in the Autumn Internationals, and you go to an England game, and I felt like a scally. just a normal...
You're wearing a hoodie, Tim?
Normal middle-class lad. I felt like a scally because I didn't have Hunter Wellies, a barber jacket, gingham shirt, mustard chinos, and I wasn't sipping... I was not sipping champagne with a raspberry in the top of it and a mint sprig. So I felt really out of place. But when you go to Cardiff, you realise rugby is the... every man's game, and so they may well have a population of 3 million, but every one of those 3 million people love rugby. Whereas in England, I'd probably say you're lucky if 3 million people love rugby out of the 55 million in England.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I was saying the other day to you, Tim, that the school that I went to, I was one of two lads out of 160 in my year who played rugby.
That's it.
And the whole area, there was like 10 schools,
I
none of them played rugby.
I had a class size of 9 and we all had to play. Yeah. And there were some rubbish kids in that. 9.
But you look at, what was it? I looked at the advertising hoardings in the Millennium Stadium during the game, and it was Peter's Pies was one of the. I mean, like, you go to Twickenham, it's all Land Rover, Bentley and stuff like that. Peter's Pies and National Express were two of the most prominent advertisers. And you go outside the ground, you couldn't get like a hog roast or a sort of a wrap of any kind. It was hot dog, burger, that's it.
Yeah,
exactly.
The people there don't know the meaning of the word sushi.
Oh, horrific. Could you not even get some high quality macaroons or something?
We had them on the train down.
We had some on the way down.
We may have had some olives, falafel, phyllo lamb pastries and macaroons on the journey down.
I remember
down.
Sitting on a train all the way down to Cardiff for Wales, Scotland. I was still in school at the time. And two guys sat down next to me, opened up their lunchbox, and it was just raw mushrooms. That's all they had.
That's awesome. I don't get me wrong. It sounds like I'm being well snobby. I'm not. I'm actually just pointing out the difference in... the rugby-going crowds in Twickenham versus Millennium Stadium. I thought Millennium Stadium itself was absolutely awesome.
Is that your first time there?
First time for an international rugby match.
Yeah. Mm.
And absolutely loved it.
Yeah, it's quality, isn't it?
My first time too. And just the atmosphere. And it's generated partly by the crowd, like you say, because everyone loves rugby. But also, it's so steep. You're so close to the action. Like we were high up. We were halfway up the top tier. The vantage point, we felt like we were looking down on the game. We felt we had a really good view because it's so steep. It's brilliant.
It was awesome. It's just a great occasion.
When it's really loud there, you do have a feeling that Wales can't lose.
Yeah. And that in that second half, early in the second half, when Ireland had all that territory and possession in Wales's 22, and they had phase after phase after phase, and when that penalty was won, I think it might have been Warburton who won a penalty because of trying to turn over the ball on the floor, jackling over it. The crowd just erupted.
I bet it's amazing.
I haven't heard a noise like that at an international. It was like they'd won a major tournament, like they'd won a World Cup. And Jamie Roberts even tweeted today, Sunday, as we record this podcast, he tweeted going that the crowds, they were aware of it on the pitch. He said the crowd's reaction to that defensive set was unbelievable.
Yeah,
it was incredible.
The whole game was incredible. In my mind, I've had, 24 hours and plus now to mull over it and think it through. In my mind, it just shows Gatland is insane. Because just think about, not that he's insane, maybe he's partly insane, but also the players must trust him so much. Because when he comes to the team meeting on the Wednesday and he goes, right, guys, I've got the plan to beat the Irish. What's that? We're going to make 80 tackles more than the most ever tackles ever made in any Six Nations game. Imagine that. Oh, okay, yeah, we'll buy into that. What if he said that you're going to, if you have any other stat, like we're going to have 80 more scrums or 80 more passes or 80 more offloads, you'd think he's insane.
Yeah.
Because it's so much greater than the last precedent.
Part of it comes down to... just the way that Ireland were playing. They played unbelievable low-risk rugby. And I almost felt like they'd bought into the negative criticism about them kicking too much. And they purposely didn't... Against England, they made 38 kicks, which by no means is a ridiculous amount in any Six Nation game, looking at the stats. In this game, they only made 11 out of kicks out of hand, which is unbelievably low for a Six Nations
exactly
game.
That. And another stat for you, folks. I know you love your stats and facts. Ireland, going into the games this round, had the least number of offloads in the competition comfortably.
Yeah,
and their whole game plan, as we've talked about many times, has been about safety, territory, no errors, keeping things tight. Or Corbisio would say, keep it kind of quiet. and they've been doing that this tournament, and it's been effective, and it's beaten Southern Hemisphere teams. Why wait until the tightest of matches to see if you can play rugby?
Well, this is the thing, though. They didn't.
Well, they kind of.
But they
played it in the wrong areas, and they didn't. Oh, I don't know. They were trying to run it out of their own half, whereas the whole time they've been kicking it.
But they weren't. They were trying to keep ball in hand. They weren't trying to play rugby because they never went wide.
Yeah.
They used Tommy Bowe as a ruck clearer. They used him like Miles Benjamin. Yeah.
It was funny. Just on that, it is quite funny. Phil, just sitting next to him watching the Ireland Wales game. Phil loves Tommy Bowe like JB loves Miles Benjamin. It was every time Tommy Bowe didn't go on. Tommy Bowe, go on. Tommy Bowe, good ruck. Tommy Bowe, great clear out ruck. Tommy Bowe, but that's all you had to say about Tommy Bowe, wasn't it?
Two players of similar talent. I think we can all agree on that. Miles Benjamin's probably a bit quicker.
I'm not sure about that.
I bet he is.
But you're right. Ireland kind of played more rugby in the sense that they didn't play the territorial game through the boot, but they didn't play any rugby in the sense that they just played one out.
Yeah,
hit ups.
One out runners all the time. Another stat. So there's a really, really good article by Russ Petty in Rugby World analysing Ireland's kicking, and he was saying that it has appeared that they've kicked a lot more than any other team, which they haven't done statistically, but they've only made an average of 2.8 metres per carry. So they're carrying the same number of times, they're just very ineffectual when they're doing
Wales,
it.
Or against Wales, that's negative 2.8 metres per carry.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Wales might have redefined the standards of defence.
Well, this is it.
I think.
Ireland played into their hands.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I would not want to, if you're a proud Welshman, I would not want to say that it wasn't an immense defensive performance, because it was. But I don't think it was as good a defensive performance purely for the fact that Ireland played no rugby whatsoever. They just popped one out, ran in. That's easy to defend.
I'm evidenced
by the fact that, Luke Charteris, who's basically his job in the defensive line, is to be guard or the man outside guard, he made 31 tackles.
Yeah.
That's because they just ran at the guards.
Well, it's incredible as well. When we're watching the game, and Ireland are basically on the Welsh line, and they're battering over. You can see the Welsh kind of clawing the way back 1 yard at a time.
Yeah.
It was just awesome to watch.
Because they were so predictable, it allowed Wales to get that line speed. So you're meeting them behind the gain line every single time.
Yeah, and the Irish line speed itself wasn't actually bad. I mean, they looked very, very good defensively.
Yes, yeah.
The other thing as well, I noticed about Wales is tackling, and tell me if you think I'm wrong, was the lack of hits. It felt to me they were tackling very passively. So I was screaming at the screen, because I felt a lot of times they could have absolutely smashed the Irish, but they did a lot of side-on tackling. And
they were two men on one every time, and they were bringing it. They weren't smashing them back every time, but because they were hitting them behind the gain line and taking them to the deck immediately, the net effect was marching them backwards.
Yeah. It was,
and it was like you say, Jenkins put a few big hits in early on, and Hibbard put a few in when he came on to be the wrecking ball. And
I do like him as a sub.
Did he knock himself out? We didn't see on TV.
Probably.
Yeah.
It looked like he was out.
He looked
a bit unsteady getting to his feet, watching from a long way away in the stadium.
He had to come off, I think. He did get replaced.
Did he get replaced?
Yeah, I imagine in that case he probably did get concussed. God knows what he's like doing the concussion protocol.
I mean, the woman in the bar at Cardiff Arms Park, I'm assuming she would have had to have gone through concussion protocol before she was allowed to go and watch the game.
Definitely.
I was really disappointed by Ireland.
Yeah.
Just how easy they made it for Wales.
Easy? They had to make 80 more tackles than ever been made.
Predictable.
Exactly that. And by comparison, when we'll talk about the England game as well, and Scotland and England, both, you saw the effect of trying to offload the ball into space. England a couple of times did it forward, but it's devastating when you do it
at the right time.
At the right time, in the right way.
Well, do you know what? I've got another theory about Welsh defence and why in Ireland and Wales now have two very, very good defences. And my theory is, It comes from St. Gatlin's side, which would be best at the jobs that require no skill. Well,
yeah.
If you want to build a brilliant attacking machine filled with genius, you're going to need some genius. If you don't have genius, it's much easier to get the boys fit and build a structure and make them work hard. So Wales are basically the best at the jobs that don't require any skill. And I think that's why we're starting to see this kicking game as well. It almost feels like they're afraid to hold the ball and play rugby, so they kick it away. They back their D because they know it's great. And also, I think they're trying to milk cards, red cards and penalties from challenges in the air. And that's statistically the best way to do it.
Wow.
I do think that Wales only had 30% possession and 30% territory. They had no ball.
But why do you want it?
And no position. But they did at least try and spread it wide. And you saw that when Scott Williams scored his try, that they spread it one... Typical Wales pattern. Mm-hmm. Spread it one way, spread it the other way, spread it back the other way, and there was the room because Heaslip was not quick enough to get into the line and cover across inside Tommy Bowe.
Let's talk about Ireland for a second because I want to play you this. So they have this pundit. You know, imagine Sky Sports or BT Sport is on RTE, and they have a couple of old fellas on there, really old fellas. One guy called George Hook.
George Hook.
I've heard this guy.
I know George Hook.
He can be a controversial figure. And, I mean, this is bordering on xenophobic. So there's two kind of points here. There's one about picking non-Irish nationals in the international team squad. And then there's also the element of talking about the centres, which we'll get onto. So this was George Hook.
Playing against England nine times and one
five. Oh, no, wrong clip. There we go. Here, this is George Hook.
Ireland has a problem if it plays second-rate foreign players in front of Irish qualified
Charles,
players.
You mean pain.
Madigan has been appallingly treated by Irish rugby. Yeah, O'Connor at Leinster, he has.
Nonsense. He's just not been picked, George. It's something very different. He's played here. He's played for us for 3 years. He's become Irish qualified. He's committed himself to Ireland, and I think he should be treated with the respect
so
of an any
more
Irish
will come
player.
Over and commit themselves
well, I think
to Ireland.
He should treat respect that any Irish player.
So if I say he's not better, that's not treating him with respect.
Should we
when
be
I
like
say he's not as good as Ian Madigan?
Right, so there's 2 points there. Basically, Jarrod Payne in the centre, some people have got a bit of an issue with, following the lack of creativity. And also, we can park the national thing to one side.
Yeah.
Do Ireland have a bit of a problem at centre? Because they just lacked any sort of creativity. Tommy Bowe never got the ball.
Let's just go back to what happened yesterday. Yesterday was one of the most spectacular pieces of masterful defending ever seen, and the stats bear that out. That's all that happened. They played against a very, very good Welsh team.
But like we said before, they never tried to create anything. They never ran a move in the backs. They never tried to put it 12, 13.
The only pass they do was pop inside. They love the pop inside and the Johnny Sexton wrap around.
So they almost played into Wales's hand by doing that.
I don't think having Payne at 13 is going to make you more or less creative.
No.
They're making is he's a fullback. Jarrod Payne's a fullback, and he's playing in the centre for Ireland. They do have more creative, sparky players. I suppose there's one point here. It's like you've got to remember, and maybe the honeymoon period's over after that game. You have got to remember Ireland have just broken up the cornerstone of their team and their back line, probably for over a decade.
Yeah,
and that's going to take some time to bed in. Jarrod Payne and Robbie Henshaw, are they the right men?
I don't know if it is going to take time. They've already beaten South Africa. They've already beaten Australia.
They've already beaten England.
Yep. You know, they're pretty bedded in. They just played a good Welsh team, and that's it.
Like we said before, though, they've almost got two fullbacks in the centres, and you see how effective their kick chase game is, which is why it's just so confusing to me that they've only kicked out of hand 11 times, and they've completely gone away from that kick chase game.
Do you think that was coached? Because Johnny Sexton did not cover himself in glory. Three kicks out on the full. The fact he got replaced in the last 5 minutes when they still could have won it probably tells you quite a lot about how Johnny Sexton played.
Two missed penalties?
One missed penalty. It was the very first one.
But a rare poor game for him.
Yeah, it was a poor game for him. But because he's so integral to Ireland, and we've spoke about that before, how fit was he? Because he limped off against England with a hamstring injury.
Not as fit as you think Tommy Bowe is. But, sorry, you mean fit as in aerobically fit and strength fit. Right,
yeah,
got you.
Yeah. I think was he 100%? Because to be honest, that's not the Johnny Sexton that we all are used to.
Do you know what, though? Johnny Sexton, although he has the big name and everyone loves him, I love him, I think he's a great player, he's probably not as dangerous a runner as Madigan. because Madigan can run the ball. And if you do want a bit of a spark, I don't really have a problem with them changing Madigan for Sexton. I think it's, in fact, pretty...
What, late on in the game?
Yeah, pretty solid substitution, actually.
It is, but still, it all comes back to just the lack of ambition and the limited game plan that they played.
Mm. Yeah.
Just one more thing on the game. The two penalties at the end. Me and Tim both thought Wayne Barnes had a very good game.
Okay.
Particularly second half.
Yeah.
He facilitated that great second half, which was a brilliant bit of rugby theatre.
And free-flowing and just lots of phase after phase after phase after phase.
He let the boys play. However, I don't know what the television... I don't know what you thought watching it on TV, JB, but that final two decisions...
I have no idea. The answer is I have no idea.
The scrum to Wales when Ireland were driving and had the momentum, and it looked like when Ireland scored the penalty try from a pushover try, it looked pretty similar. The maul which Ireland had marching forward went down somehow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But this time it wasn't a penalty to Ireland or penalty try, it was a scrum Wales.
And then the scrum itself.
Are you telling me that was Ireland wheeling the scrum? They... obliterated.
Something happened in that scrum.
Wales' tight head, Aaron Jarvis, I'm sorry, this is another thing. If you were playing against Italy, would you want Cardiff Blues' first choice tight head prop, or would you want their fourth choice tight head prop starting for Wales?
Whatever Gatlin tells me.
Because Samson Lee is not going to be playing.
No, he's not. Well,
and Aaron Jarvis is not up to it, scrummaging international rugby.
Can you name the three props likely to be selected for the Italy game? Or the ones that have been called up into the squad.
For Wales?
Yeah.
I have got no idea. Because Jenkins might be out as well.
Jenkins could be out, yeah.
So, Paul James, was he there?
A broken hand.
Oh, God. No, then.
So
no.
A guy from Exeter, whose name I...
Mitchell.
Craig Mitchell. Not him. It's no one like Brewster or Reskill or anyone like... So it's some guy from Exeter that I've not heard of. I think Rob Evans will be called up. Maybe a quick call to Avion Lewis-Roberts. Who knows?
God.
Oh, God.
I've been banging that drum for a couple of years.
But just to go back, I was baffled. I was scratched. I mean, I let's not take it away. It was a brilliant game.
Yeah.
It's great for the tournament because it's so open now in the final weekend, and that's a good thing. And as an Englishman, I'm happy with the result. But I was scratching my head. Those final two decisions from referee Wayne Barnes, who other than that, I thought had a really good game.
Well, the yellow card for Sam Warburton was a bit silly. It was
a penalty. I'm surprised he gave a yellow card.
Well, yellow cards, as we've discussed before, are silly. so, yeah, that could have ruined it. Because Wales usually leak about 12 points, don't they, with the yellow cards?
Yeah, that was testament to them. And again, a demonstration of Ireland's lack of ambition.
Right. Mm. Something for us now before we go into the England-Scotland game. Other than the fight we saw... Well, not a fight. Yeah, it was a fight. Other than the woman getting knocked out by a rogue elbow flying backwards on a chair at a rate of knots we saw in the bar in the Cardiff Arms Park, the other big dust-up has been Jeremy Clarkson. I've got a contender for someone to take Phil Clarkson's shoes from the rugby
Phil
world.
Phil Clarkson?
To fill
oh, right, sorry.
Jeremy Clarkson's shoes from the rugby world.
Good podding.
I just went down. I went down a YouTube wormhole and I found this horrific bit of blagging, which also could double up as a little segment on Top Gear. This is James Haskell, and the video is entitled "Why I Love My Car."
Oh,
and this is basically one massive blag to get James Haskell a Range Rover.
Hello, I'm James Haskell. I'm here in Paris at the famous Stade Charlety, the home of Stade Francais. And I'll give you a little tour around my car, the Range Rover Sport.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Of course it is.
What is this music?
One of the key features of this car for me is definitely going to be the seating position. With all the weights we do and all the subsequent driving, the seating position's got to be perfect. Otherwise, if you spend any longer than half an hour in the car, your back falls to pieces. In a Range Rover Sport, that doesn't happen.
You may ask,
in a Range Rover seat in any other car. Well, I'll tell you, if your hips are higher than your knees, you can ask any physiotherapist. It's the best way to drive.
Your hips are higher than your knees, is that right?
Mm.
There you go, never knew that.
One of the other key features of this car has got to be the sat-nav. Now, whether I'm driving between Paris or London or just around Paris, if you don't know where you're going, you're stuck before you've even started. But with this sat-nav, it's so easy to use. It's touchscreen, and it's kept me out of many scrapes. One of the byproducts of being
I'd love to know his recent destinations.
This is horrible.
My Philips house.
But in the Range Rover Sport, that's never a problem. And you do get a very fetching plastic rubber mat, which keeps everything pristine.
It's horrible to watch.
More horrible to put like the urban music in the background.
It's just one big blag. But potential Clarkson. I don't know. Maybe Haskell's liked too much.
Poor old Clarkson.
You have to be Mr. Marmite a little bit more to be Clarkson.
I did tweet him.
Hold on. You say poor old Clarkson.
You don't even know what happened.
The
Tim defence is coming out any moment.
No, you don't even know what happened.
He's a
millionaire. No, it has nothing to do with being a millionaire.
That's what you're going to say next. I know.
No. If I put one of my colleagues in hospital by whacking them so they needed stitches in their lip, then I might actually sort of go, I've probably crossed the line there and I might get the boot.
Yeah, but he's talented,
especially
isn't he?
If last year I called an Asian person a racist term and offended Argentinians as well. And
offended Argentinians? How dare you?
Etc. How
dare you? There are islands.
Etc. Anyway, let's not go there, but who is rugby's...
That's a scandal you'd even say that.
Who is rugby's Mr. Marmite? You know, no one would sort of have been indifferent to. They absolutely love or they really loathe.
We had a chat about Haskell.
Haskell's probably up there.
Haskell's definitely up there. Some people do. They can't stand him.
Cipriani as well.
I feel bad saying this about Haskell. I kind of like the guy, and I just don't think he's good enough at international level.
Nonsense.
He's
amazing.
He never offloads. He cannot offload. He doesn't have hands. He's not. He's just.
He's a workhorse.
He's just a workhorse.
I tell you what, if he was Welsh, he would definitely play.
No, he wouldn't.
Oh, he would.
He wouldn't get in above Lidgett or Faletau.
He's just a grafter. He's in great, great, great physical shape. I feel
he is in great physical shape.
He is in great physical shape. I agree with that.
When he's on his, when he's playing well, he can completely dominate a physical situation, the breakdown in the mall, and we had, you know...
Well, that's it, physical situation, yeah.
That's half the game.
It's like you get into an arm wrestle, you're not going to beat New Zealand in an arm wrestle. You need to do something more than that to beat New Zealand, Australia, South Africa.
But he was completely ineffectual against Ireland.
But he's very effective against Wales.
Well, on to England then. And here's another thing, just sort of linking the Wales game and the Wales-Ireland game and the England-Scotland game. The way that the Welsh fans react to Sam Warburton is amazing. We were in the stadium when Sam Warburton was giving his post-match chat, and I don't know whether you picked it up on the telly, but the cheer that he got just when he started speaking, regardless of what he said, was just phenomenal.
Yeah, just when he appeared on the big screen, he hadn't even opened his mouth yet.
He's a hero, though.
And we were commenting on the unbelievably marked difference between how he is treated by the media and by the fans compared to how Robshaw as captain is treated, and I certainly don't think there's much between the two of them in terms of talent, ability.
The question I always ask people is, what does Warburton do? And when's the last time you saw him have a really good game? Now, people will say, oh, he played really, really well against Ireland. But when you ask him, well, what did he do? People start like scratching their heads and they, you know, start stumbling over their words. Oh, well, he makes loads of tackles. Well, look at the stats.
Yeah, he made 23.
Yeah, I mean, he had...
Which is a lot of tackles. He did tackle very well.
This game, his stats compared to Robshaw aren't actually that favourable.
No, they're definitely not.
No, and the other thing I noticed, you saw the love and the adoration that the Welsh rugby captain gets, and the indifference and the cynicism that the England rugby captain gets. We noticed it being in Cardiff.
Because...
And secondly, we also noticed, and Phil, you mentioned that BBC Six Nations advert that got banned a couple of years ago, that where they had basically all the other countries going, yeah, we want to beat the English. And they said, oh, no, that's going to...
BBC are awful, aren't they? It's just awful. Awful, awful organisation.
Well, OK. OK, leave that to one side for a second. That's the opinion of JB.
They're just terrible.
BBC may want to have an Egg Chasers podcast one day.
I'm pretty sure they won't.
Anyway, that advert got banned, and it was tapping into the fact that everyone loves to hate England. We were in a pub watching the England-Scotland game, and when it became clear we were English, oh, my word.
Yeah.
Did we get some stick? And there were people, you know, when we sort of clapped the England try at the end to put them ahead of the 12 points that they won by, there was people going, oh, you should have beaten Scotland by more, they're rubbish. But I actually looked at it, England beat Scotland by a bigger margin than any other team has beaten Scotland by this tournament.
Yes. Yeah.
Sorry, just go back to Sam Warburton thing a minute. The reason he's treated the way he is...
typical Welshman, just talking about your Welsh captain. No, yeah, go on.
But other than the fact that his style of play is very manly and very, you know, like rugged, hard-working, that kind of stuff. So it's easy to relate to. But well, not for me. I'm not rugged or hard-working. but the reason he's treated the way he is because we don't have anywhere else to go. We really want it to be the case that he is the best seven in the world. And if we will it enough, he will be the best seven in the world.
If you say it enough times, people eventually start to believe it.
Exactly. Rob Shaw, on the other hand, you know he's not the best seven. So, you know, that's why he's treated the way he is.
Mm.
Didn't even make the Lions tour. Do your own maths, sir.
Do you know what? There's been a lot of people saying, oh, England lacked a bit of cutting edge and ruthlessness. I was more encouraged than discouraged by England.
Yeah, they look good. I thought they looked fine.
I like George Ford more and more as a 10.
Hmm, that's interesting.
When he's got space to play,
yeah,
he's a very different 10 than when his space is closed down.
Yeah,
it does make a huge difference.
When you can pop Big Luth into space and get Joseph on the outside shoulder.
I mean, how they didn't finish more tries is...
Yeah.
Beyond me, but they're making chances, and that's half the battle. They've still won, and when they do their video analysis on Monday, it'll look very, very good indeed. You know, anyone criticising England now is just I think they're looking for talking points rather than anything else.
Yeah, there are a few things to criticise towards the end of the first half, probably the last 20 minutes of the first half, when they started so brightly but only managed to get 7 points on the board,
yeah.
Only managed to get one try and bombed a couple, and then Scotland really came back into it and looked. Scotland looked really good.
Was it 13-10 at one point?
Yeah.
I think the difference is, and this is what could potentially cost England World Cups, because I think up front they're going to be able to match teams when they need to. Defensively, I think they'll be able to match teams when they need to. But England made 11 clean breaks.
That's...
And they scored three tries, and you know, you've got to convert. And that's what New Zealand do. They convert.
I'll tell you, I don't think it's the right move for England, but who they could bring in to increase that conversion ratio.
Miles Benjamin.
Not Miles Benjamin. Right position.
Brad Barrett.
Right position, so not Miles Benjamin. Christian Wade.
Nope.
Well, that would increase...
The guy that you want, when you make a clean break, you want on the pitch, because he will always...
Ashton will run the right supporting line.
Ashton, yeah. reads the lines better than any other player
now,
in the England
setup.
That is
a guy who I think has been badly treated.
I think he's got his weaknesses, but if you'd had him on the pitch there when Big Luth makes his break, he would have run the correct supporting line,
yep,
and made it an easy pop pass rather than Luth having to look at a 20-yard pass and then not
Big Luth. Big Luth, give him his proper name.
Yeah. Sorry, Big Luth.
Who are you talking about? they look very dangerous in England. If they, it does feel a little bit like the World Cup's maybe a year too early for them. You would like to see George Ford play another 12 months, you know, get May and Luther and...
No. Big Luth.
Big Luth and JJ all playing together for an extra year would be awesome. And of course, you've got Eastman to come into that as well.
And Manu.
And Manu, potentially, if he ever does come back. I read not a very good article the other day.
What did you read?
Well, it was a perfectly good article, but it was good for an England fan. Not good news.
Not good as a fan of...
A terribly written article.
Yeah, not good as a fan of Manu Toilagi.
Well, what did you read? You keep telling us.
Just saying that he's had three return to playing dates all scrapped, and they basically don't know.
He's so strong, he just keeps ripping the muscle off his own bone.
Wow.
There's no positive indication as to when he's going to come back. No. The only thing is they hope he comes back before the end of the season.
Now,
but that's a hope, that's a finger in the air.
Did you read the article by blogger Figurative Pocket?
About the director of rugby?
I really, really enjoyed that. And it kind of comes back to this thing, which is... if you're a director of rugby now, can you hold a Manu Tuilagi? He's going to be away with internationals. He's going to, you know, his body's going to be wrecked because he's always playing. You're going to pay him a fortune, and he's never going to wear a Leicester shirt.
You do get reimbursed for internationals.
Do you?
You get quite a fair chunk of wedge to compensate you.
But
for
I mean, even so, doesn't mean you can have another player because there's a squad size limit too, right?
Yeah, and you still got the overall salary cap, don't you? Unless that is outside the salary cap.
That,
and like Tom Croft has come back, played a couple of games for England, dislocated his shoulder 2 weeks ago playing for Leicester.
Yeah.
So
if you're Leicester, I think you'd like those two salaries off your books immediately.
Possibly, unless they can get an extended period of fitness. But looking back over the past couple of years,
you can get extra salary cap space to compensate for injuries if you have to get someone in to cover an injury.
There are little
ways around. Yes, I agree.
You can still pay it. So in France, in France, the government pays their sick wage.
Yeah, the local council.
Local council pay it.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
And they can get they have different rules around the medical jokers they can bring in.
Going from France, should we talk about? Well, firstly, before the game, I mean, Italy against France is just the game where, as an Englishman particularly, I just feel such inferiority about our national anthem.
Yes.
Well, as I tweeted, for two such stirring anthems, they're very bad. They're surprisingly bad at fighting wars. you'd think, with all the emotion that builds up, that they'd actually be quite good, but quite the contrary. And by looking at this game as well, they were even worse at rugby.
Well, here's our take on the Italy-France game. That was our highlights of the Italy-France game.
I'm trying to think of something really positive to say about this game. I will say something positive. I really like the Italian nine. I think he's quality.
Yeah. Eduardo Gori.
Gori, that's it. He looks like he's a real talent. Gori, that's not an Italian name, is it? Is he Georgian or something?
Spedding's a very French name.
Oh, and he was quite good, actually.
Yeah, he was.
I tell you what about Spedding, other than he's massive.
Spedding.
Yeah, when Eddie Butler pronounces it.
He is ridiculous. We said it before, but he's ridiculous. Eddie Butler. So unless you do it for everyone,
yeah,
don't do it for France.
Lolly.
He doesn't really do it with the Italians either.
No. Well, of course, Haimona went out early.
I know Haimona wasn't playing.
Went out before the game.
Went out before the game.
Oh, right.
And then Alan.
Because Alan tweets himself in the warm-up as well.
Sorry, it's not Alan, it's Alan.
Alan. Even though he's Scottish. Alan.
Even though he's Scottish. No, it's definitely Alan.
Alan.
Mm. Yeah. So, a bad day for Flyhawks. The scrum half was pretty good. Oh, Spedding. He looks, when he runs, he looks like he's running really fast. Do you know, some people glide. Well, yeah. You can really see him working
hard. He's really working.
Yeah.
Yeah, but not actually getting anywhere that fast.
Well, he made a nice little line break for the first try.
For the try.
There you go. I'll tell you what, Phil, I've got you a special bit of music just for this. I want you to run down in kind of... You just imagine yourself on Top of the Pops back in the day. You're running down the different permutations of what could happen and what needs to happen for different various countries to win in the final round of matches next week. Take it away, Phil, our stat man.
OK, so currently in first place on... Well, tied on six are England, Ireland and Wales. But in first place on points difference, which is what it comes down to, are England with plus 37. In second place are Ireland with plus 33. In third place are Wales with plus 12. And in fourth place are France, who are 2 points behind, but are still mathematically in it. I think they're on plus 22 for points difference at the moment.
So they would need...
I'll just deal with the France one quickly, because I work this out. If France beat England by 15, let's say...
Well, if they beat by 10.
Yeah, OK, if France beat England by 10, Ireland lose, and Wales only beat Italy by about 15... Mm-hmm. France are champions.
No.
No?
No.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes. Without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
France need England, Ireland and Wales all to lose. And only then can France...
No, I worked it out. France can beat England by 15. Right. Ireland lose, and then Wales only beat Italy by 20, and France become champions.
No, because France are on 4 points currently, and Wales are on 6 points.
Yeah, so...
So France would still be 2 points behind Wales.
And you make a good point! Fine, yes? This is why Phil is the stat man. Shut up. Go on, carry on.
So, assuming England win by... by fewer than 3 points more than Ireland win by, then England win the championship regardless. Unless Wales put 25 more points on Italy than England do to France.
Okay.
Now, the only scenario that can possibly mean that France win...
This is where I should have shut up and just listened to Phil. Go on.
Yeah. Is if Wales lose to Italy, Ireland lose to Scotland, and France beat England by more than 10 points, basically.
Fact.
Wow. And that would allow Ireland to lose by only 1 point, and France then take the championship.
If that happened, would the world end?
It'd be probably the worst team to ever win the Six Nations.
We would get sucked into a wormhole, and that would be it.
I'm going to look at my phone. Done. It's just got no phone reception. The earth is starting to feel hot.
But the permutations are interesting because England play at home, but they play the
last.
But they play the team of the bottom three who are highest up. Wales play Italy away. Italy, who are Wales, need the biggest margin. Italy are arguably the worst team.
Wales already won a game. Wales' previous matches in Rome, they won 26-9, 21-16, and 2015. But in their previous games.
They know they need to beat them by 25 points more than England beat France by. Assuming England do beat France.
It's not statistically, I don't know what I'm saying here. You're saying England are in the driver's seat.
England,
because you're looking at the points on the table.
Points already scored.
Yeah, money in the bank.
They also are the only one that play at home.
But what are the odds of Wales winning? Because they've got the easier draw in terms of a team. And actually, England might not even win their game.
Agreed, but Wales also might not win theirs, particularly given the front row problems that we have, and that's the biggest area of strength of the Italians.
Yeah. Okay, maybe. The Italian scrum didn't look great today, though.
No, it didn't against that massive French
and also,
scrum.
if they can get the referee in their pocket a little bit like Wales did, somehow managing to convince Wayne Barnes that was a penalty to Wales. But anyway,
But then Ireland are only 4 points in points difference term behind England. And they're playing Scotland, who haven't yet won a game, even though they've put
but
in some good positive
But then Ireland have scored, what, one try? How many tries have Ireland scored in the tournament? Two? One of them a penalty try?
Yeah. Not many. They didn't score against France. They scored two or three against Italy.
I'm going for England. I'm going England.
Do what you want.
I think Ireland. I think Ireland will revert to... more kicking, not necessarily all they do is kick, but they will revert to more kicking, which suits their game plan, suits the players they've got on the pitch. And I think they'll beat Scotland by 5 to 10 points more than England beat France by.
But just remember this.
Hear me now, believe me later. Nicky JB's catchphrase.
Yeah. Just remember this. Scotland have to win one game this Six Nations. They have to.
I said
they would.
Yeah.
So... It's only one game left. This is one they have to win.
They are going to win, yeah.
Regardless of the outcome of their games, I love the way Scotland try and play.
Yeah,
I really like their offloading game, the popping players into space.
I was just saying this to Phil before the show, that they've basically been robbed of a victory when they took Finn Russell away. Stop it!
We've been through this how many times? Yeah, leave it!
Nothing's changed. Nothing's changed.
Leave it.
The banning players... Watch this. Banning players is so absurd.
God.
So what happens...
I don't want to buy it. No.
I was going to say, what happens if Bigger lands on his head and he's out for 6 months?
It happens. It's sport. It's rugby. That just happens. What happens if Chris Cheikhai goes over on his leg and breaks his tibia? He's out. It's just rugby.
That's the point if it's done legally rather than illegally.
What happens if the Christians get eaten by the lions? It just happens. It's a gladiatorial sport.
Sorry, I just wanted to break that up.
Thank you, Tim.
Right, listen, as happens a lot of the time, there's a lot of hospitality stuff that goes on in marquees outside international grounds. And there was a marquee and there was a load of ex-England and Scotland internationals outside Twickenham in one of the marquees. Probably getting, but it doesn't matter what they were getting paid, probably getting paid a fortune by some corporate sponsor to turn up and
it's
have
an
a bit
evil
of a laugh.
Corporation.
Here's a good bit of banter, though, between Doddy Weir and Kenny Logan. So there was a load of England, ex-England pros there, Will Carling, Brian Moore, Kieran Bracken and various others. And then there was just two Scots. There was Doddy Weir and Kenny Logan. And they were having a little bit of a crack about how basically they'd never beaten England. This is the two of them, starting with Doddy Weir.
Played against England nine times and won.
Fuck off.
But anyways, mine's not as bad as that. I did six times and won. Fuck off. You must be shit, Doddy.
You got a lovely wife.
I knew that was going to come up.
I've been told you've been known as Gabby's husband. But anyway.
It was good. It was good. I'd like to see them in an after-dinner little double act.
That was good. I enjoyed that.
You're saying Ireland win?
Yeah, Ireland win the whole thing.
Okay. Oh, Ireland win the whole thing. I can see teams that are up there, England, Wales and Ireland, all winning. I can also see Ireland winning, beating Scotland by enough to take the championship. I think England will struggle against that pack. And so they'll struggle to get front football and therefore they'll struggle to put their backs in space like they did against Scotland. So I think they'll win, but only narrowly. And I think Ireland, reverting to type, will have enough to beat Scotland comfortably, so they'll take the title.
I think England will turn it on. I think they will... Is it at Twickenham?
It is.
It is at Twickenham. See, I mean, this will mark, I think... Here's my prediction. It's very much me trying to be an optimistic Englander. This will be the bookend from Cardiff 2 years ago when it was the Grand Slam decider and Wales had to beat England by, what was it?
Yeah, 20 points.
And they beat him 30 points to three. They absolutely smashed him. Yeah, it was incredible. But that was like Stuart Lancaster, rabbit in the headlights. Oh my God, this is what international rugby's about. He's got a mirror image of that. This time at home, and I think he's going to show, and I think his England team are going to show that they're the ones that are going to come out like Wales did 2 years ago and blitz France and their massive pack.
Because, of course, England play last, so they will know by how many points they need to beat France by in order to win.
Is it Saturday? Is it Sunday?
It's Saturday.
I like it when it's on Saturday.
By the way, I wanted to say, how much disco was there before the Wales-Ireland game? Because me and Phil were at the Millennium Stadium, but the person who had your ticket... Oh, we haven't even talked about this! How have we not talked about this? Go on, JB, tell everybody listening to the podcast the reason why, as you know, a proud Welshman, you didn't have the third lovely ticket that Canterbury offered us for the podcast. Tell us why.
Okay, so
tell us. No. Just tell us. Don't try and dodge this one. Tell us.
No, I will be very.
Tell us why you weren't there.
I will tell you all why this happened. So our fixture list for Broughton Park comes out
early. Here we go.
So Layla, my lovely wife, decided that she'd book us a nice weekend away in London. Thursday, she asks for a quick sit-down because we need to have a talk.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, exactly. And the talk was, I've not been completely honest with you about what we're doing in London. You're going to need to get your black tie dry-cleaned. We're going to the ballet. Thankfully, Layla was ill on Friday, and I cannot describe the euphoria which came over my body when she said, I'm just too ill to get the train. The temperature's just too high. But by that time, I'd given away my Wales under 20 tickets and my Wales versus Ireland ticket, so I couldn't go. But it was worth it just not to go to the ballet.
Oh, you missed Swan Lake.
And we were going to watch Swan Lake 2.5 hours. Oh, and here you go, right? So Layla's mum tried to persuade me that this, I would enjoy it. And how would she do this? Well, she'd obviously tug at the heartstrings and say, oh, you know rugby players do ballet to keep fit, yes? I'm like, hang on, Suze. All I do is watch rugby, talk about rugby. I do a rugby podcast. I'm pretty sure I would know if James Haskell was doing ballet in his spare time. Don't try him. Oh, well, I'm fully into it then. If you tell me they're doing ballet, I'm fully into it.
Pilates, yeah, I'm sure they do it, but
yeah,
done about ballet. Although, sure Hugo Monier would look outstanding doing ballet, wouldn't he?
He'd be very good at it too.
Yeah, I bet he would.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's why JB wasn't at the rugby. I've got a little bit of a game, Six Nations-based game for us to play.
Ooh,
sounds like fun.
An age game. So it's going to be you two.
No.
It's going to be you, JB, against you, Phil. And your however far away you are from the age will be your score. Lowest score will win. And the topic is Six Nations head coaches.
Oh, God.
So the age, please. And you'll take it in turns.
To go first.
Heads or tails, Jay?
Heads.
Okay, hold on. It's tails. You want to go first or second, Phil?
Can I go first, please?
Okay, if you're a mug. Why would you want to go first? Because you get to listen to his guests first and then go second on three of them. Anyway.
There's six teams, isn't there?
Oh, yeah, six teams, you're right.
The last one.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah. You ate him.
What is up with me today?
It's going to end up even, but I want to go second.
Sorry, what is up with me today?
Have you seen that NHS video and they tell you how to detect signs of a stroke? Tim?
Is it fast?
I can smell burning. Right, Joe Schmidt.
Tim, you keep winking at me.
Can someone press play on the music? I can't use my left arm. Right, Joe Schmidt, Irish head coach.
Oh, my
Phil,
God.
Phil.
My God.
Age. Good game's a quick game.
I'm going to say 48.
48? No, 51.
51 says JB. 48 says Phil. Joe Schmidt, 49.
So
Phil has a score of 1 because you were 1 away. JB, you have a score of 2 because you were 2 away.
God damn it.
Good scoring so far. JB, you're first. Warren Gatland.
52.
Not far off that. 54.
Warren Gatland, 51.
Yes!
JB's on 3 total. Phil on 4 total. Stuart Lancaster.
46,
I think.
Stuart Lancaster is 45. Phil got it right. So you're 4 all. 3 rounds, you're 4 apiece. Now, Vern Cotter.
Oh, God, I have no idea.
It's on me.
It's you first.
48.
I think I'm going to say 46.
53.
Oh, yes!
God.
Am I winning something?
JB's on 9. Phil is on 11. JB's got a lead of 2 with 2 to play. Philippe Saint-André. Phil, you go first.
I'm going to say a nice round 50.
51.
47.
Oh, wow.
Makes Phil get 3, so you're on 14. JB got 4, so you're on 13. 14 plays 13, 1 in it, with 1 to play.
And Jay goes first.
That'll teach me for being a coward.
Jay goes first.
Who's last one?
So, JB, you're playing first.
Italy.
With a slender 1-point lead currently with Jacques Brunel, Italy's head coach.
53.
I think he's a bit older than that.
If you think he's a bit older than that, are you gonna be a dirty sailor and go 54? Or are you gonna play like a man? Are you gonna play like a man?
If it's 54 and it's more than that, we can only possibly draw. So I'm gonna have to go 55. And if it's more than 55, then I win.
Right,
because
geek.
I'm two points out. So I'm gonna go say 55.
Oh, he's such a stat man. You know, he worked all that out.
If it's any more than that, I win.
Jacques Brunel, JB says 53. Phil says 55. 55 or higher, as Phil pointed out, will win it. Jacques Brunel, 61.
Why?
Yes, I knew he was older than that.
JB can't win a quiz. It's actually becoming more entertaining the more times you try and fail to win. It's getting better and better.
Wonderful quiz, Tim, wonderful quiz.
Guessing ages is such a stupid quiz.
Has nothing to do with rugby, does it?
Nothing to do with rugby. That's how we'll do prime ministers or something.
Did you see all the rugby players tweeting about their mums on Mother's Day?
No.
By the way, there was Billy Vunipola's was my favourite one. He took a picture of his back garden and like a homemade proper hog roast. There's a pig on a spit in Billy Vunipola's back garden. He looked like he'd threaded it on the spit himself as well. It was absolutely awesome. And he just said, "Hope you're hungry, mum." Freddie Burns took his mum to the theatre.
Didn't like Purcell have a campaign for Mother's Day a few years ago? Like, what a hero a mum is. And there's another one as well. I think it could be Purcell. And they advertise to women by showing how amazing they are, because one woman can stir a coffee and at the same time hang up washing, just to show how versatile and multitasky that they are. I found it fairly patronising.
Big fan of Mother's Day, Jay?
No, I quite enjoyed it today. It was nice.
It was nice.
Yeah. Very good.
We all love our mums. But the rugby players, there were some brilliant ones.
Most famous rugby mum?
Mrs. Underwood.
Mrs. Underwood.
She got a lot of screen time. She was like the Bruce Craig of her day. Yeah. Any game she was at, she'd be...
Bruce Craig?
Cut to her all the time.
Bruce Craig has gone quiet
He's
recently.
He's fallen off the radar, hasn't he?
Yeah, we need to see more of Bruce Craig, not less. Maybe I think he's back when in his secret den, secret lair somewhere.
He's been relying on Sam Burgess, like not to be getting any camera time. The only time he gets on camera now is when Sam Burgess is in the stand watching the game.
Do you think Sam Burgess will go back to
Manly Sea Eagles?
Yeah.
No.
Is that because they're very masculine, or is that the place?
Very manly.
It's a place.
Oh, right.
Thanks.
Sorry.
Hold on a minute. It wasn't registering for Tim.
No. There you go. Is there any more? Is there anything you prepared or anything, Phil?
No,
that's cool.
Do you want to do some rugby problems?
Yeah, hold on a minute. I'll just do this. Right, well, should we briefly mention the LV Cup then? Because we've long time been critics of the LV Cup. We understand what it's good at. It brings through a lot of young players, and it looks like being a really good final.
Exeter
again, current holders.
Who will take it seriously because they're a prideful club.
Well, yeah, and but equally putting a lot of young guys in that game, and their production line is looking impressive at the minute.
Yeah, it is. They've got a huge catchment area, haven't they? Because they had kind of...
And like a rugby hotbed. In the way that we were talking about Wales early in the podcast, saying, you know, that is everyone loves rugby. And we're in Manchester right now. We all live in Manchester. And the schools, unless I send my kid to a fee-paying school, they won't play rugby.
No.
At school.
No. As I didn't.
Well, yeah, because everyone's so risk-averse now.
I mean, No, that's not why. No, that's nothing to do with it. It's a cultural
absolutely
thing.
Absolutely not.
People just don't play rugby.
No,
they never have played rugby. Hasn't changed.
My school was a football school, as was all the schools in my area, as was the whole of Manchester. It's no one plays rugby.
And also, like, the rules for school rugby now are so diluted for kids. It hardly resembles anything which you'd do as an adult.
Well, I don't know about that. It's only little things like, you can't push more than 1.5 metres in a scrum. I think that's great because sometimes you get a 17-year-old that's freakishly big. Mm. And also there's things like no squeeze ball because that puts your neck in a vulnerable position.
I've never seen anyone get injured by a squeeze ball, though.
It has happened, though.
Has it?
Yeah.
Do you know, in New Zealand, they do it by weight, which sounds more...
Yeah. Phil was telling me about that on the train down while we were tucking into some macaroons.
Nice.
On the train down to Cardiff.
Which sounds eminently more sensible. But can you imagine trying to introduce rugby to a non-rugby school? A, they don't know what it is, but B, the teachers would have a fit in today's like health and safety culture. It just wouldn't happen.
Well, here's a bit of safety that this could potentially get some non-rugby playing guys into rugby, because this is Liam Gill doing a WWE-style suplex on Nick White's for the Queensland Reds on the Brumbies. So I want you to watch this.
I've seen this. I've seen a picture of it.
Have a look at the actual video. This is just an incredible manoeuvre. It's like a judo throw. He'd got an ippon or whatever it is for judo.
Two in the side.
It's against Saifenga coming in.
And they scored from it.
They scored from it, yeah.
Get a double, Benny Alex.
So, Liam Gill could get a serious punishment for that.
That's okay. I don't know what rule he's broken.
He
went above the horizontal.
Yeah, but he's also responsible for him coming down, not on his head.
Yes, he didn't come down on his head.
They can go beyond the horizontal, can't they? But they've got to then be responsible for putting him back down.
Yeah.
Which is why... Oh, yes! So, we were talking, weren't we, about Leighton Hodges last week.
Yes.
And then, would you believe it, RGC had Leighton Hodges the very next day, who refereed their game against Swansea on the weekend. And the feedback from Leighton Hodges is that he's an excellent, excellent referee. In fact...
He would say that, though.
No, sorry, this is from the RGC lads that played underneath him.
Yeah.
He said one of the best refs that they've had. But he did restart what was the rule, Phil? Can you remember?
The big, bald, very good RGC second row.
Very good player.
Is that the same guy I saw playing for the Barbarians?
It is.
The same guy. Same one.
The same guy. Very talented player.
In fact, let's ask you, how do you restart the game? So, the big, talented, bald second row for RGC spins round and fires a pass.
Well, he catches a shot at goal that misses the goal, and he catches it with 1 foot inside the in-goal area, 1 foot outside the in-goal area in the 22. And he goes to pass it to his fly half, who's standing behind the goal, completely misses him, and it just goes dead. How would you restart that?
That's a good question.
Doesn't he aim for a linesman? I thought he aimed for a linesman.
It goes near the linesman, right. But the linesman then picks it up and brings it back in, but... Yeah.
What's the restart protocol or whatever it is?
Well, surely whether you... would have to be a 5 metre scrum.
That's what I said.
Because if you throw the ball, even if you catch the ball in your own dead ball area, if you then throw it out, it would still be a 5 metre scrum.
If you throw it out, that's deliberately throwing it out, and then that would be a penalty. 5 metres. But the way that Leighton Hodges restarted it, which, looking through the rule book, we believe is the correct way.
Law book,
was a 22 dropout because it was accidental, not on purpose. And the ball was already, because he's half in goal, it's counted as being fully in goal. So, and there it's just gone naturally dead from that.
Because the opposition kicked it into the
in goal area.
So they took it in.
Yeah, so they took it in and it's gone dead naturally from that rather than deliberately.
That's awesome. Well played, Leighton Hodges.
Fact.
Yeah.
We do say nice things.
That's why they get paid the big bucks, just to instinctively, straight away, boom, have that bit of knowledge in their locker.
Yeah, yeah. But what he's not told you is they gave him excellent parking.
Listen to last week's podcast to work out what that is about. I don't think there's anything else to talk about.
Are there any games next week? As in. LV.
There's LV Cup final.
Is it LV
right, we've
final?
We've got a guy called Paul Harris who's going to call in if you want him to, with a rugby problem for us to answer.
We can try it, and if it's no good, cut it.
Yep.
What's his name?
Paul Harris.
Have you boys watched any of the Super Rugby? By the way,
I watched a bit on Friday. But because we were out all day Saturday.
What's the studio number? Am I always put studio number on Twitter?
We'll call him. Yeah. Tell him to give us our number, we'll call him.
Tell him to DM us his number. Try to think on Friday, what did I watch?
Let's leave all that, that's fine. So in terms of fixtures for this weekend, obviously we've talked about the Six Nations and what we think will happen. There is Super 15 rugby. But other than that, there's no Premiership. The one match there is the straight away the LV Cup final.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting way to do it, to consecutive weeks.
Yeah. It's.
Is that right, actually? Have I got that?
Is
right?
It LV Cup
22nd?
Sunday, 22nd, yeah.
Yeah, it's Sunday. This coming Sunday, held at Franklin's Gardens, and it's between Saracens and Exeter.
I think Exeter to win.
Do you reckon?
Yeah.
Saracens put out a pretty strong team.
I think they'll both put out good teams, but I think it means more to Exeter because they really appreciate being there.
Yes.
I think one thing we should mention, by the way, in the British and Irish Cup, which is the second tier cup for championship clubs and the A teams of the and some of the Principality Welsh teams, and also some of the A teams for the Pro 12 clubs. Doncaster beat Bristol, and Bristol put out a strong team.
Really?
Yeah.
So that's two games that one in the league that Bristol lost to Cornish Pirates, was it?
Yeah.
God, that's interesting. So it's by no means certain that they will go up this season, is it?
No. And you know, a lot of people say about the money they're flashing and stuff, but I don't know. I don't know if it's quite as good as everyone's making out.
Well, they're all kind of older players, aren't they? They're kind of they're aging. They've got some, shall we say, personality risk in there.
Mm. You know, not some of the aging, naming no names.
Gavin Henson.
But yeah. they had the likes of Peronisi and David Lemmy in the team. Nicky Robinson at fly half in the team that lost away at Doncaster. So
they've got Nicky Robinson, haven't they? They've got the young Welsh lad whose name Matthew Morgan.
Matthew Morgan. Ryan Jones.
Ryan Jones. But there's another 10 they've got there. Is that Aaron Jarvis? Is that Premiership? Not Aaron Jarvis. Anyway, they've got a good team. Is what I'm trying to say.
Cool. Should we call this fella then?
Yeah, let's do it.
We don't have to.
Yes. Here you go. That's the number.
What's his name? Paul Harris. Do you know what his thing is so we can think?
It's something to do with wearing shirts at games.
Okay. 07841.
Do we have a... He looks fast.
Paul Harris. All right, cool.
And, do you know where he's from or anything about him?
No, he's a rugby player.
Can you have a look where he's from or what his team is or anything?
What were you going to call it? A section called Rugby Problems? Running, triathlon, marathon, ultramarathon, IT, deputy head teacher, northeast of England, very proud father, fundraiser, NSPCC, Newcastle on sign. Sounds like your kind of guy, this.
It does.
It sounds exactly like the person.
Oh dear! I love the Clarkson trumpeting brigade. Like, he only split someone's lip open punching them. But leave him alone.
But he's so talented. He doesn't play by the rules that we do. He shouldn't do either. He makes millions of pounds a year because he's so talented.
Yeah, but separating that, I love it. Like, but the default defence that I saw on the Daily Mail comments, which I always look at and have a crack at, was basically
my friends are college.
Oh,
journalist.
That's fine. Then the BBC don't mind paedophiles doing this, but fine. But all he does is put someone in hospital.
They can put him, well, he reported himself. That's the other thing. And there's no sign that he did put anyone in hospital. I've not heard that. That's the first time that I've heard it.
Well, he got stitched up in hospital.
Yes, yeah, man up. You know, it's a fracas. I mean, I assume he might have started the fight, but I assume that if it's a fracas, his fists go in both ways. And he's not been suspended.
Just get him a steak and shut up.
Yeah, get them on a steak. He's been filming all day. I don't understand. We're so righteous now. Everyone is equal.
Right, let's call Paul Harrison.
Right.
Time for a new segment on the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, where we turn from three rugby fans into three rugby agony ants.
Basically, yeah.
Solving problems. And we have got a listener to the podcast based in the Northeast, Paul Harris, who has got in touch, and we're just giving him a buzz back now to sort his problem out.
Hello?
Is that Paul Harris?
It is.
Paul, it's Tim, JB and Phil here. How are you doing?
Hi, not bad, how are you?
Hi, Paul.
What, who's your team, Paul? I know you're in the Northeast.
Probably Harlequin, to be honest. I'm from down south originally, so I teach up here now. So.
Deputy head, no less, shaping young minds.
attempting to.
Now,
is it a rugby school, Paul?
Get some grief off your boys, don't they?
Yeah, a little bit. Well, JB particularly.
Now, quick question for you then, Paul. Do you play rugby in your school?
No, it's a primary school. We do play rugby. We do rugby league and we do touch rugby. But it's not a proper rugby school as you in my classes.
Rugby league is proper rugby by any definition.
Yeah. All right, Paul. So we put the word out there. We've had a bunch of people coming back to us with, but we want to hear your rugby problem. What's the issue?
The problem is that next weekend, my brother-in-law is an Irish fella, and he's got me tickets for the Ireland-Scotland match, obviously, and we can now see that it's going to be a cutting-edge sort of game up there. England could win the championship, so I'm wondering whether it's worth going up there with the England top on and sitting in Murrayfield and taking it off everybody.
How did you find it being a couple of Englishmen? Phil and JB had a stag do in Edinburgh at the Scotland-Wales game.
No, we just had a day out. Just
did you not go to the game?
No, yeah, it wasn't a stag do, but yeah.
You had a day out. Yeah,
we were there.
You were at Murrayfield, so, and you went in proper like English tweed hunter welly. So it wasn't an England shirt, Paul, but it was kind of English regalia.
I do you know what? I'm kind of uncomfortable with any man over a certain age wearing any kind of sports top. I think there should just like be like a cut-off.
At what age? 23?
I'm not even sure. I think 23 might be too old.
18.
18, I think.
Full kit.
Yeah. I mean, it's nothing worse than... rugby's got a bit more leeway because the kits are nicer. But there's nothing worse than seeing like a 40-year-old bloke in like a Liverpool shirt... Or like a Newcastle shirt, and then it's got like some funny banter.
He's
like
again, this fella, isn't he?
He is.
Nothing worse.
If he ever comes up, he's going to be lynched as soon as they know who this guy is.
I'm coming up for Magic Weekend.
Yeah, because that would be brilliant. Yeah, that will be but good. They'll not let you in, fella.
my honest thought is that there was a lad in me and Phil were in a pub in Cardiff watching the England match after the Wales Ireland game yesterday, and there was one lad who was wearing an England shirt, and every time there was a forward pass and the try got disallowed or there was a knock on or something, the whole pub were pointing at
him. Turned on him.
Him the stick.
As if he knocked it off.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I was in Cardiff the year we got stuffed there at the end, and horrible place to be. Like we were just in the booze, we weren't in there, but everybody, like honestly, people coming out of nowhere just to take the piss out of three of us.
Coming out of their houses like with their towel around their waist like they're just about to get in the shower just to point
at
him.
It was like the reverse Homer Simpson when he goes into the head. It was like they were just coming out of walls just 2 minutes laugh.
I think as well.
This is like my chance to get it back on. Like, and my other brother-in-law is a Scottish fella as well, so you know it's a no-lose situation next week.
Oh yeah,
unless England lose to France.
What would you honestly do, Phil?
I probably wouldn't. Just like you say, in case England at the end lose to France, because you'll be out drinking afterwards after the game. Still wearing your England shirt, and then if
it's like I don't know whether it's a full kit England shirt or whether you just put like a sort of polo shirt on with the rugby.
Yeah, I would say right.
I'm a bit worried about what he's saying about this 40-year-old wearing an England shirt.
Well, I think at all costs you want to avoid the match fitted shirts.
I've seen Paul's Twitter profile. He's in good shape. He does ultra marathons and stuff.
Yeah, but still,
not these guns. They're not big guns up top, though.
I'd stay away from the match weight shirts. Now, if you're going to go for the classic cotton replica, that's fine. But I think you've got to go for a classic replica, like the England BT Cellnet. Yeah, I saw one of them out.
The World Cup winning ones. Yeah, that's
wonderful.
I've got that one up there somewhere.
An old school shirt.
Yeah, you could definitely do that.
Yeah,
and also because it's cotton
with a blazer.
Exactly what I'm thinking.
Fella. You've seen my Twitter profile. I'm wearing that sort of gear.
Oh, no.
What about Halfway House, an England tie?
England tie,
yeah,
or
a
buttonhole.
Buttonhole.
You want people to know that you're English, don't you, really?
Yeah, you could go in something. What else would be really obviously English, but not an England shirt?
Top hat.
Chainmail and a horse.
I could just go in like that fella with the St. George's suit on.
Yes, do that with the chainmail, like a knight of armour. Like a knight of armour.
Yeah. I'm thinking more a bit more subtle than that.
No,
perhaps.
I think full chainmail.
Practical.
It's safe.
It is safe. It's very safe.
I think the wife's got some upstairs in the bedroom as well. So she'll kill me if she hears it. And so will my brother-in-law now, actually.
Personally, I say go for it, do it, and we'll look forward to seeing the picture of you from your A&E bed on the day after the game.
Yeah, I'll put something on Twitter. I'll send it to you next weekend. So.
Scarf or something else. Not a full England kit, but a scarf or just a little something.
I'm with Phil on this. I'd probably go for the England tie myself. But if you're going to go kit, just go full kit, shorts, socks, a lot.
I'm no full kit, fella.
There you go. It's going to be an amazing weekend of rugby. How do you see it going? We were just talking about what we think is going to happen, and JB and Phil think Ireland are going to come out on top. But I actually think this is going to be... You were there in Cardiff for the Millennium Stadium when England got absolutely smashed you in Cardiff. I think this is going to be Stuart Lancaster's moment like Gatland had that night. I think it's going to be our evening.
Jesus, it's just going to be hard with the French as well, isn't it? It's like they've got to turn up at some point, haven't they? And you just worry about them. And if it's the points difference now, England in two games have given away so many points now, haven't they? Like, or by not finishing chances against Italy and Scotland.
Yeah.
I think that's going to kill them. But it depends. Like the Welsh, you know what they're like as well. They'll come out of nowhere, just out of the walls again, and they'll probably be the ones that will steal it. I've got a feeling it's going to be them. Like they'll bang on a load of points against Italy, I'd imagine.
And then if they do that, then everyone else is playing catch-up.
And massive pressure on them, yeah. And I don't think Scotland's going to be a pushover next week for Ireland either, especially if Sexton has another game like yesterday. So.
Yeah, I don't think he will. I think he'll pull it out of the bag.
Yeah. Good luck to England, I'd say. So.
Damn right.
Definitely.
Enjoy the game, Paul, and thanks ever so much for getting in touch with us.
Cheers, Paul.
Yeah, good luck, lads. And good luck when you get up to Newcastle, fella.
Cheers, Paul.
Nice one, Paul. You take care, mate.
Cheers. And you, buddy. Bye. Bye.
Oh, top lad. And if you...
Solving rugby problems for everyone.
And if you have a similar dilemma, then get in touch with us. Tweet us at Rugby Podcast where you can get in touch with us and we'll have you on the podcast next time.
And do you know what we'd love to hear as well? People who've got, like inter-club issues, you know, like they're not happy with the selection. So then we should be quite contentious if they knew that you were phoning in with it.
You've got a few problems like that at the moment, haven't you,
Would
Jay?
You like me to discuss them?
Not on air.
Not on air.
at Rugby Podcast is where you can find us on Twitter. It is going to be an unbelievable weekend of rugby. Super Saturday has been dubbed, and I can't wait to be talking about the final round. The Six Nations is amazing, isn't it?
It's good.
I love it.
Yeah.
I absolutely love it.
And it's so good that there was no incredible 50-yard try scored on Saturday when we were at the Wales game, but it was just such an unbelievable spectacle because of how important it was to both teams, both sets of fans, and just because of like the heroic defence that we've already spoke about is absolutely brilliant.
I can't wait. Where are we watching it? Because we're not going to any of these games. But once more, and we should say thank you very, very much. And Canterbury do amazing gear, as you saw in England's kit, Ireland's kit.
Yeah.
And the wonderful leisure wear you're wearing there, JB.
It's nice. Thank you.
Beautiful.
Very nice.
Mm.
You look like Jeff Powling.
Thank you. That's really nice.
But yeah, Canterbury, £250 of their kit will be given away as our prize in the Fantasy League. So make your changes wisely. There's all to play for in that. And thanks for getting involved. Thanks for tweeting. Thanks for downloading. Thanks for the iTunes reviews. And please keep doing it. And we'll keep podding. I cannot wait till next week. Till then, JB, in a bit.
Goodbye, Tim.
Laters, Phil.
Cheers, Tim.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.